Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You've got this tug of war going on between the government and the Bank of England. That doesn't lead to a stable situation.
We must face up to the fact that for too long, our economy has not grown enough.
I'm prepared to do what it takes to get us through these difficult times, to get us through this difficult winter, and to come out stronger as a country.
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics, your daily guide to the corridors of power. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Coming up on today's programme, the day after the big speech, we hear too from the government's Paymaster General, Edward Argyr, and discuss how new projections on how the Chancellor's tax plans could see millions pay more and not less in income tax. Plus, we'll analyse the PM's conference address with Bloomberg Opinion's Therese Raphael.
So she got it over and done with. Liz Truss speaking to the Conservative Party conference in Birmingham for a total of 36 minutes. Certainly not a long speech, much shorter than Keir Starmer's speech a week earlier. I thought it was a confident speech and a competent speech. It seemed to me fairly upbeat. I didn't think that she dwelt too much on the challenges facing the country, but I suppose there's no point in delivering a speech saying everything's awful. But it seemed fairly upbeat, and I think it sort of passed off without too many major incidents, really, other than the protesters. I thought she handled that quite well.
Actually, she recovered quite quickly and moved on and managed to weave them into her narrative. So, you know, that was all good. I mean, the thing is look, the expectations were so low given what a bruising party conference Liz Truss had had. The fact that she got in there, delivered a solid speech and moved on, I think, is being sort of hailed as some sort of a triumph.
Well, I think it helps. I suppose it's one advantage of having very, very low ratings, isn't it? Is that you can kind of only surprise on the upside. And I think, you know, her delivery style is not, can I say wooden? Is that a bit harsh?
This is the point that we've heard from Lizzie Burden a lot on this show, is that, you know, the progression of Liz Truss's oratory style has been very, very steep through the party leadership contest. And we saw the results of that in the speech that she made yesterday. So it's certainly something that has evolved over time.
Yeah, and she's had loads of practice over the summer, of course, at all those meetings facing Rishi Sunak, the MP's choice. Well, anyway, today she's in Prague, where she's going to urge European politicians to stand united against Russia's invasion of Ukraine. She's one of 44 leaders gathering there for a historic first meeting of a new political club of nations, the brainchild of France's Emmanuel Macron. Russia is not invited.
Well, a foreign work trip might feel like something that's relatively easy for Liz Truss after her party conference wrapped up in Birmingham, overshadowed by a humiliating government climb down over plans to cut taxes on the country's highest earners.
Well, after the PM's big speech, we got reaction from Edward Argyr, Paymaster General and Minister for the Cabinet Office. He spoke to Bloomberg's James Walcock.
Fantastic speech. Vintage Liz Truss. Vintage, you know, Liz, as a minister and as a prime minister, high energy, clear focus, clearly relating to and understanding the challenges people up and down this country are seeing with their bills, with their lives, and setting out a clear way to address that. And of course, running throughout it, Liz, clear focus on delivery and getting it done.
Now, some of your party weren't here to watch it. Some of the MPs haven't shown up. The Home Secretary even said Monday's U-turn was because of these people turning coat, turning tail. What would you say to the MPs who weren't backing Truss at this point?
Well, I think the party, all my colleagues, are determined to deliver for this country. And just as the PM is delivering for this country, they are working as one with her, with the whole team, to deliver for Britain. That's what this is about. Every party conference, you will have been to many of them, of all parties, and there are always occasions where some MPs aren't there because they've got a constituency engagement, they've got other facts. So I think that's a distraction from the clear message of this conference, from everyone I've talked to, which is we have a clear job of work to do, we have a Prime Minister with a clear vision on what we need to do, and we have a Prime Minister with a clear ambition and a clear focus on delivering that vision for the people of this country.
Now, obviously, some were other constituencies, but then some were here causing trouble. You talked to Michael Gove, talked to Grant Shapps, they came out against those tax cuts. Do you believe that they are satisfied now? And if they're not, what would this government say to those rebel backbenchers?
Well, I think you're focusing, if I may, and it's your job to do so, on particular, often process issues, rather than the big picture of what we're looking at here. What we're looking at here is a party in government united in its determination to deliver for the British people and to deliver solutions to the challenges, very significant challenges, this country and many other countries face in the context of the war in Ukraine, energy prices, and of course, as we came out of the pandemic, the impact that it had on our economies. That's what you see. You see a party which is, and I've been around conference talking to different people. The ideas that are being expressed here, fantastic. Huge amount of ideas, energy, ambition, and drive. And I think, talk to anyone, they are united in their determination to deliver for the British people.
Let me take you on that big picture as a final question then.
Of course.
There was a laundry list of incredible coherent policies that Liz Truss announced. We talked European Court of Human Rights, getting growth moving, deregulation. There was so much. But a lot of it were things this government has set as a priority before under the Johnson administration. What makes this government deliverable now that wasn't deliverable a year ago, 2 years ago, even 5 years ago?
Well, in the context of any government, you know, you have a programme of things you want to do, and over the course of a parliament, you schedule them in and you get them done. What I think we're seeing here today, and you saw it in that speech with the energy, is Liz Truss is someone who gets things done. She delivers. And she has a very big ambition for this country. But in my experience of working with her in the past, when she sets out to do something, she gets it done. And that's what she's going to do now.
Final one. I obviously come from Bloomberg. The investors are watching this conference very, very closely. What message do the markets take away from this speech?
Well, I'm not going to. You tempt me, but I'm not going to speculate on the markets. But I think the message I think anyone can take away from this speech is that we have a Prime Minister who understands the challenges our country faces, who has a clear plan for tackling those challenges and a determination to deliver on that plan.
Well, it was Edward Argyll, Paymaster General and Minister for the Cabinet Office, speaking to James Wilcock at a busy conference centre in Birmingham.
Watching those events at Birmingham closely was Bloomberg Opinion's Therese Raphael, who's with us in studio. Therese, you've written that this speech was Truss's best performance yet, but that the bar was exceptionally low. Did she manage to make up for what was a pretty difficult party conference?
I think that would be too tall an order to ask her to make up for all of the things that went wrong that week, from, you know, being ambushed by, Tory heavyweight Michael Gove, the statements undercutting her government agenda from her own cabinet ministers, to the debate in the hall. It was a pretty bad week. But yes, she pulled out a very competent, you would even say, strong by, given the level of expectation speech. I think, there were two things that she was trying to get across. And the one was that the change will be disruptive. Some people won't like it, but everyone will benefit. And the other thing she was trying to do was define who her enemies were, who the party's enemies were, who the public's enemies were, this anti-growth coalition. And the problem with both of these is, first, everyone won't benefit from the policies that she's setting out. In fact, what we're seeing is mortgage holders, people on NHS wait lists. We don't yet know how she's going to pay for these, but it's clear that there are going to be trade-offs and there will be losers, as well as, one hopes some winners from that. And the problem with the anti-growth coalition, which you know, includes just about everybody who's not a Tory, is that there are a lot of members of the Tory party who are supporting policies that are indeed anti-growth. You know, they don't want to change planning permissions either. They don't want to increase immigration to get more people in the country working. So, you know, she's got an anti-growth problem really right on her backbenches, maybe in her cabinet. So you know, these are huge challenges, and no one speech isn't going to be enough. But it gives her a bit of breathing room. We'll see when she gets back into Parliament what the mood is.
I want to pick up on one of those challenges, actually, something you've also written about recently. You write that it's hard to overstate how reliant the Tories are on the sucrose drip feed of rising house prices. This is going to be a big problem, isn't it, for the Tories at the next election? Not just much higher interest rates, but the expectation that they will lead to falling house prices. If they've got both of those things, that's going to be really problematic, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that is just a huge problem. This has been the party of homeowners since Margaret Thatcher. An entire generation has seen housing prices rise inexorably, has seen, you know, an era of low interest rates, hasn't had to worry. We've got 1.8 million fixed rate mortgages coming up for renewal in 2023. The monthly increase in outlays for a lot of middle class families is going to exceed what their disposable income allows. That's going to create distresses. Whether we get repossessions and forced sales, I'm not sure it's going to be, you know, as dramatic as we've seen in some past housing crises, but it's going to be enough to really hurt the Tories politically if they could, you know, sink any lower than they already have in the last 10 days.
How serious are those internal divisions in the Tory party now? And, you know, what consequences could that actually have for Liz Truss and her government?
Well, I mean, let's just frame this by saying this is the most electorally successful party in any democracy. Okay, it's you know, it's won 17 of the 26 elections it fought in the 20th century. The Tories are very, very good at closing ranks and burying divisions when it counts before an election. So that let's just preface by saying that. However, they have also cleared the front benches, the back benches, the party membership of sensible thinking people who can challenge government, who can offer expertise, who have, you know, any experience that can be really brought to bear on the kinds of problems that we're facing today. So I think the divisions are quite significant. I think the lack of, you know, what we say in America, a deep bench, is really problematic for Truss, and time is very short. How is she going to close those gaps in the little bit of time that she has left before the next election? Once you lose trust with the public, it's so hard to regain it. And you know, that's what she's got to overcome right now.
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at BloombergLive.com/AI/radio.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Now, some new calculations from the Institute for Fiscal Studies, which will be very unwelcome for the government. The IFS says that the Chancellor's income tax cuts will be wiped out for millions of people as they're pushed into higher tax brackets. The current government currently plans to maintain a freeze on tax thresholds right up until 2026.
Now, high inflation means that will have a big effect. The findings are a blow to the Prime Minister, who said more than once in her speech to the Conservative Party conference that she wants taxpayers to keep more of their money.
Well, a little bit earlier, Danny Berger and Stephen caught up with our senior economics reporter, Philip Aldrich, and our senior UK economist, Dan Hansen. We started with Phil, who broke down the impact of fiscal drag on workers' wages.
She inherited frozen tax threshold for the lower and the higher income rates. And those are going to cost, because wages are rising faster than inflation and faster than expected, those are going to cost twice as much for the average worker than the tax cuts that she's providing through the cut in the basic rate tax and the scrapping of the national insurance contribution rise. So you end up with, despite what she's saying about having a lower tax economy, people are still facing increases in their tax across the spectrum of, you know, whether they're on low incomes or high incomes because of this frozen tax threshold. So it's kind of a stealth tax that she doesn't mention.
Interesting. So this, of course, comes off the back of that Fitch downgrade to their outlook. Dan, at what point does it just go from a lowered outlook to something more pernicious for UK credit ratings?
Yeah, so I think what's really important to be watching here is what Kwasi Kwarteng says in his fiscal plan, so his medium-term fiscal plan. We're waiting for that. There's been a bit of debate about when it will arrive. At the moment, it seems like it's going to be at the end of November. That seems like a long way away at the moment. But it's really, for the credit ratings agency and for the market in general, it's just going to be really important that he sets out something credible and a credible plan. And it's going to be on the spending side. He's going to bring in a lot of spending cuts and a credible plan to bring debt onto a downward trajectory. Because at the moment, taking account of the tax cuts, taking account of the increase in market rates, the increase in gilt rates that we've seen, debt's going to be on a rising path into the future. And he needs to go a long way to rectify that. And he's going to do that by announcing what's likely to be a quite severe set of spending cuts.
Philip, how does that compare with what you heard from the Prime Minister yesterday in that speech at the Tory party conference? You know, she was advocating responsible management of the public finances, but didn't quite go as far as admitting that there will have to be cuts made.
Well, she didn't say anything of any substance in that speech whatsoever. She said, I will grow the economy. This idea of there being an anti-growth coalition is a total straw man. I don't know who in the world actually wants there to be no growth. But so she set herself against this kind of pretend adversary and then just said a lot of made a lot of verbal promises, and there was no detail. So I don't think anyone can feel reassured about what's coming, apart from the fact that, you know, she says there will be an iron grip on the fiscal position. How we're going to have this iron grip is how she's going to deliver that I don't know. I mean, she said there's not going to be any new tax rises, that she's facing massive pushback from her MPs on spending cuts, on benefits, the departments, NHS, etc. They're already squeezed. She wants to increase spending in defence. And these tax cuts that she's already pushed through, the 43 billion now of unfunded giveaways, she can hardly, well, she could U-turn on more of them, I suppose. But, you know, politically, she'd be a complete dead duck at that point. So, I suspect there's going to be tax rises as well as spending cuts, because filling this hole, if she's hoping it can be done by growth alone, and for the OBR to maintain its credibility, to rip up, you know, 10 years of, you know, of very prudent estimates of future growth potential, and to just hand her a massive windfall like that would be quite extraordinary.
And of course, amid all of this, we had the BOE step in, buying long-dated gilts. Dan, that's set to end at the end of next week, if I'm not mistaken, on October 14th. What happens when the market is on its own, that it doesn't have the buyer of last resort anymore?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really important question, I think. I mean, for us, I think there's a pretty good chance they'll extend it. It's just, they're not, what you've seen in the auctions that have taken place, there hasn't been anywhere near as much take-up as the BOE has sort of been offering at the top end. It's been offering to buy £5 billion worth of long-end gilts every day. It's been nowhere near that take-up, but it's just the fact that the BOE is in the market, obviously acts as the, as you've said, the buyer of last resort. And I think, to be honest, the backstop needs to stay there until we get some detail. First of all, I think on the fiscal plan, I think that is much more important in terms of reassuring markets than, for example, the BOE's meeting on the 3rd of November. I think it's much more important. It's all got to come on the fiscal side, this, if we're going to get some sort of calm come back to the UK markets generally. So I think there's a pretty good chance it gets extended, to be perfectly honest with you, and possibly beyond the BOE's meeting and to the point that this fiscal announcement comes. And it's obviously one more reason to think it could be brought forward. I think, you know, the end of November just seems so far away. This thing needs to come much sooner than that.
Philip, I'm curious as to your view on that. If we, you know, how soon could we expect the OBR forecast to come, and what sort of for, you know, what sort of impact could that have on the government's plans?
Well, there's been, so Mel Stride, who's the senior MP on the Treasury Select Committee, which kind of oversees Treasury and Bank of England from the parliamentary perspective, he was pushing for the fiscal statement to be brought forward to before the Bank of England's forecast, which is on November the 3rd. And the reason he says you need to do that is because the Bank of England can't set policy and draw its own forecast up until it knows the facts. And if you are in a situation where you need policy to be relatively stable, you don't want the central bank to be having to make things up. So there's definitely, and the Treasury has been briefing. You'll see reports of this. Has been briefing that that they do intend to bring the fiscal statement before that date, before November the 3rd, so sometime at the end of October. The on the record line is that it's still November 23rd, but apparently it is going to be brought forward. And obviously, this would be, you know, welcome in as much as it would help stabilise things. It would help provide some greater degree of certainty over the fiscal plan, which is why risk-free rates have just spiked, and you know, mortgage rates and the cost of borrowing in the real economy has shot up. It just all comes down to the credibility of the government ultimately. And so, the sooner that's resolved, the sooner we kind of get back to a more stable, you know, financial and economic setting.
And we're still in an environment where markets at the moment are pricing in over 100 basis points of rate hikes from the BOE come next month. Dan, can the BOE really follow through with that if it would result in mortgages, for example, skyrocketing, the consumer taking a big hit off of it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. I mean, for us, I think the choice is between 75 and 100. And we'll, at the moment, we're calling for 100. But I think, you know, if we see a big change to the fiscal stance in the medium-term fiscal plan, that will obviously, we'll have to take that into account, and the bank will be taking that into account as well. I mean, just the broader point I would make for this meeting in particular is that it's a bit of an open goal for the bank, because there's been this massive shift in fiscal policy, not only on the tax cuts, but the energy support as well. And that gives them, I think, you know, that gives them space to go big for this meeting. I think what's important, equally important, in fact, probably more important when you're thinking about what you're talking about in terms of mortgage rates and things like that, is where the terminal rate for this cycle is. And I think there the market is getting ahead of itself. I think the latest market pricing is somewhere between 5.75%. I think that's too high. I think once we get above sort of 3.5 to 4, and perhaps a little bit above that, the bank is going to be very careful, because I think the thing, and as you've mentioned, the thing they're really worried about is the housing market and tipping the housing market into a really severe downturn. So I think the markets are overestimating how far and how high rates will go. But I think just thinking through the lens of November, there is space for the bank to go big just for this meeting.
Phil, we're going to be hearing from a range of Bank of England speakers over the next week or so. What sort of message would we be expecting to hear from them as that uncertainty that Dan was just talking about remains over the fiscal outlook?
I imagine they'll try and steer clear of making any commentary on the fiscal side, because they've got this rule where they're not really allowed to talk about that. Obviously, they break it when they really need to. But they're actually over in at the IMF meetings in Washington. Andrew Bailey and one or two others, and so there's also going to be this backdrop of this. The UK is a little bit at the centre of a sort of potentially global financial storm if we continue to mess things up. So they're going to be under pressure to basically make sure that they do what's necessary to assert the institutional credibility of the Bank of England, show that they're getting on top of inflation, getting rates up to where they need to go. And then, you know, perversely, or sort of counterintuitively, if they do raise rates really aggressively, you could actually see the long end of the market rates curve dropping. So, because people might believe that inflation is going to come under control, and there is credibility. So, there's a lot of moving parts, and it'll be quite interesting to see how things go down in Washington.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
Osage County, Oklahoma is getting a lot of attention right now. It's the setting of Martin Scorsese's latest film, Killers of the Flower Moon. The movie is based on a book about the 1920s Osage murders, when white men poured into Osage County and killed Osage people for their oil wealth. I'm Rachel Adams Hurd, the host of In Trust, a podcast from Bloomberg and iHeartMedia. For over a year, I was reporting a different story about other ways white people got Osage land and wealth, and how a prominent ranching family in Osage County became one of the biggest landowners here. Their ranching empire was built on land that at the turn of the century was all owned by the Osage Nation. So how'd they get it? Listen to the award-winning podcast In Trust on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.